We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
Hey, good morning, and thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I appreciate you being here. I hope you're having a wonderful long weekend. It's a somber thing tomorrow, Memorial Day. It's in remembrance of those who died during active military duty. And so a somber day, certainly. We remember those people, but there was always debate, you know, back in the radio days. Like, you would hear commercials, you know, Memorial Day sale, furniture, used cars, whatever, Memorial Day sale. And you would even hear people say Happy Memorial Day weekend, and it was always like debate over, like, that doesn't feel right for Memorial Day. And I get it. And I hate to hedge bets here, but I see both sides. I understand on the one hand, Memorial Day itself is not a happy day, right? This is a day where we remember people who died fighting for our country. That is by definition unhappy. That is not a happy thing. However, I'm not going to come down on you for enjoying a three-day weekend. You know, be with your family. Enjoy the extra day. If you have the ability to have that day off, I think it's perfectly fine to be looking forward to it and be enjoying the extra time with your family. So I'll hedge the bets and come down in the middle on that debate. Speaking of debates, I received a complaint, one single complaint, and just to show you how customer service friendly I am, I pivoted and responded to that complaint. Oh, yes. I received a complaint regarding the intro music for this podcast. Somebody said, it's a minute long. Cut it down. Make it shorter. 15 seconds tops, they said to me. This person, by the way, somebody who I respect greatly. This is one of the people I respect more than most people in this world. This is immediate past president of Rochester Rotary, Jeff Halleck. This is a guy who I think, never heard him say anything short of brilliant. And so when this man tells me make a move, I make a move. You know what I'm saying? He says jump, I say how high. Jeff said, I think the intro, says, listen, I love podcast, which I appreciate. He and his wife Lynn, beautiful people. They listen to the podcast. I said, Jeff, anything you want. Jeff says, you know what? Jeff goes, there is one thing I want. He says, the intro to the podcast, it's too long. I fast forward through it. I said, Jeff, I don't listen to my own podcast, but every Sunday when it comes out, I click on it and I just skim through it quickly to make sure that it's, you know, actually there. And I, too, when I get to the song, I fast forward through it. But let me tell you this. I love this song. I love the intro song to this podcast. And can I tell you the origin story to it? This song is a original composition. This is a custom song. This was written by a local songwriter named Elvio Fernandez, currently a touring musician, keyboardist with the Daughtry Band. Elvio Fernandez, when I was getting ready to leave radio, I said, can I commission you to make a intro song for my podcast? He said, absolutely. What do you want it to sound like? And I told him, White Zombie, More Human Than Human meets Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit. He says, I got you. And like a week later, dropped this in my email, and I love it. So that's why I play it. But Jeff is smarter than me, and Jeff says too long. So you know what? We're cutting it down, baby. It's down. It's short. Maybe once in a while I'll still play you the long version. Maybe like one out of every 5 or 10 podcasts will do the long version. But I think Jeff's feedback was right on. Cut it short. We don't need the whole minute every time. 10 to 15 seconds to do the trick. Jeffrey, this one's for you. And ladies and gentlemen, please enjoy the time that I got to spend with Alyssa Belasco, Executive Director, New York Kitchen. Oh, yes. You know, I'm looking at you and I'm getting like, I'm nostalgic. Is that the word? I'm like homesick for New York Kitchen. I had so many great times at New York Kitchen over the years. And I look at you, I get a little bit sad, actually, Alyssa.
But we're reconnecting here. Yeah. We're going to, you know, rehash, relive.
I'm doing one, right? It was like a charity event from last year that I donated. Yeah. So like the fact that I even have just one on my calendar kind of makes me feel good.
Something to look forward
to. I get to come out. Yeah. Except for at this point, I've been gone for a couple of years. So I'm going to walk in and they're going to be like, who the hell is this guy? And also, the biggest secret, but actually, so let's be honest with you, it's not really a secret, but like the worst kept secret probably was the fact that I was an instructor at a culinary center, but don't actually have any culinary skill.
Fake it till you make it.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. So you're driving to Canandaigua every day. I didn't realize you live in what, Brighton?
The Browncroft area of Rochester. So Brighton adjacent.
So Rochester, like, like city of Rochester. And you drive to Canandaigua every single day. Can I ask
probably
you,
4 out of 5. Yeah.
As a leader, though, can I ask you, you got a lot going on. I call it the information fire hose, right? Every day, a million miles an hour, like coming at you. Is the drive actually kind of nice because it's like you time?
It is. My whole life, I've had like a 7-minute commute everywhere. And so now people are like, you drive from Rochester? And I'm like, it's a 37-minute commute, not to be exact, but like opportunity for me to like gear up for the day. I really don't like to talk to people before 9 a.m. and then the same with the unwind. You know, depending on how I feel, there's some murder podcasts and things that, you know, just to hype me up.
Can we go off on a little tangent real quick?
Yeah.
What are your go-to murder podcasts?
Well, I usually like a good series, like a docuseries. Yeah. So actually the last one, I know we're in Bergen and not Leroy, but I just listened to the one, it's not murder, but Hysterical. Is it Hysterical?
Huh.
Yeah. Where... these girls had these like tics and things.
Oh yes,
and it's old, but
I remember
that
this.
Was the latest one that I listened to.
I remember this story.
Yeah,
did it end up just kind of getting dismissed as like, oh, they're making it up or something?
It was just kind of like, and we're done here.
Yeah. I was in radio still when that story was unfolding. Like that was not that long ago. That's cool. So the show's called Hysterical?
I think it's called Hysterical.
Oh my God, I got to listen to that.
Because
I would find that interesting. And Leroy or Leroy. And by the way, if you're going, what's the answer, Polly? You know what's hilarious? They don't even know.
Then they say it on the podcast too. Yeah. I was like, okay, so we have no closure there.
No closure. Yeah. You go to Leroy and say, what's it supposed to be? You will get 50-50 answers. Even they know. Anyway, that's awesome. I love a local one that has a local tie.
Yeah. The other one called The Girlfriends, and it was this guy. I don't want to ruin it, but he was not great.
What's your take on the Leroy girls with the tics? Do you think that it was something these girls were just kind of making up, or do you think that like this got swept under the rug and it was a thing?
They were high school girls. Like, you're awkward enough. I don't think that you need to make up like Tourette's type behaviors. So.
Where are they now? Are they living life?
There should be a part two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. So that was a tangent. I'm sorry. But I do find that really interesting.
Yeah.
Also, 37 minutes to Canandaigua. Yeah. Don't let that freak you out, because I know exactly it's 23 minutes from where we sit to my house for me to come here.
I still can't believe that you have less of a commute than I do, because I think Bergen, like Genesee County.
You're
you
right.
Think.
I'm so glad you're saying this.
Forever away.
If I go to most people in Rochester and say, what's closer, Canandaigua or Bergen? You're 100% right. Most people will say Canandaigua, obviously. Bergen, people don't realize, 23 minutes from Brighton. Or I guess, Rochester. Yeah. People don't realize. And I love those 23 minutes. It's like my time.
What are you, audiobooks, podcasts, silent?
I'm all over the place, I would say. I have my music days. And I have but it's the one time a day where if I go music, I will go old school, like I'm still in high school, music way too high of a volume.
Yep.
Half the time, at least I'm singing along, you know, like I love it.
Yeah.
I just love it.
My only issue with the commute is, and I'm almost going to be going on 5 years at New York Kitchen, but when I have to be somewhere in Rochester, I still don't leave on time. Mm. I think I can get everywhere in 10 minutes, and that's not the case.
Yeah.
And I've run into some trouble because of that. Not trouble, but, you know, fines because Canandaigua, you know, I basically keep the lights on in the city.
Dude, when you, like Main Street Canandaigua, you gotta, they're there. They're looking. They're looking. Yeah. So what? Where are you actually born and raised?
Rochester. Like I grew up in Hilton, so by Lake Ontario. A little country, but it's not as country as you would think.
Hilton, and I don't go there often, but I'm pretty sure it's basically Greece and then just drive four more hours and you get to Hilton eventually.
It's basically Greece. A little more country.
North Greece.
Yeah.
Hilton is great, though. When I'm in Hilton, it feels like the town I grew up in.
I love that you like really went hard with the T, Hilton, because when you're from there, it's Hilton.
Hilton.
So I like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, Hilton.
Went to graduate high school there?
Yeah.
My standard question, if I came to you on your graduation day, I said, Alyssa, what are you going to be when you grow up? What was the answer?
I was going to work at an advertising agency.
Mm. Creative, sales, like what were you going to do?
I just said that. I don't know what the actual goal was. So I think I envisioned like a creative role.
Did you go to college for that? Or like what happened?
I ended up going to college for communications, which some people call a bullshit degree, but it's been actually something that stuck with me my entire life. So
you're using things you learned.
Yeah.
Like give me an example.
Public speaking, public relations, a lot of writing. I was a communications and English like double major. So I did a lot of writing and I still do that now.
So now everyone's a good writer because of ChatGPT, except for there's a lot of giveaways. Do you ever notice when somebody emails you and it's just a dead giveaway that it was a ChatGPT email?
The thing is, I proof things to a fault, and so that's usually my red flag. I'm like, there's words than things that are not fitting with the rest of it. I feel I've been using it a little bit more, but I honestly feel like a cheater. I use it more as like a thought starter, and other people are like, they could write your whole life, and I'm like, ugh.
Well, yeah, but you can write an email that sounds like AI wrote it because you're a good writer.
Yeah,
People who, like, my emails used to be trash. I'm not grammatical. Like, I don't know it. I'm not even sure what punctuation to use. But now I just write the email, copy paste in ChatGPT, and I just go, please make this better. And it spits it back sounding professional. But the problem is it uses those M dashes. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
That I would never use. And it puts those in there, and it puts those in there for everybody. So when you start seeing emails pop up with all these M dashes, you know somebody ChatGPT.
So I use those normally, though.
That's where I'm going with this. That's where I'm going with this. You are naturally good, so people probably now think you're using ChatGPT.
They are, yeah. Oh, you outed? No.
That's where I was going with this, because like I think that you're getting screwed. You've always been a good writer.
Yeah.
And now everybody is kind of writing that way. And you're like, no, I naturally can do this. Ugh. Anyway. So what do you think is the true maybe secret to public speaking? It's like the number one fear. People are petrified of public speaking. But you mentioned that that's something you feel like you learned. What makes somebody good at it?
I come from a let's just have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I probably don't over prepare, like don't listen to, this is not what they teach you in school, but I don't over prepare. I'm just like, also don't bullshit it, but I'm sorry. Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, but I think just talking naturally about something that you are, you know, knowledgeable, passionate about, whatever that is.
Yeah.
And don't, like some people just straight read.
That's
and sure, have some notes if you need to like reference, but I think my problem is I talk for too long, so like trying to be, you know, limit time and stuff, there's usually somebody in the background like, all right, wrap it up. So but yeah, just be natural and kind of have more of a conversation with the hundreds of people in front of you.
Yeah. I think, like, obviously it does make it easier if you can master that topic, right? Like, talking about something that you're not an expert on is a lot harder. This year I've been the Rotary president, and I've had a couple of times to go up and give a little speech on something. Like, there's a few topics I can get up there and I could crush it, right?
Yeah.
But a couple times this year I've had to get in front of a crowd and talk about something that really wasn't, I wasn't all that familiar with. And you can tell. Like, you can tell I'm a little bit more rigid, I guess, in those situations.
And usually you try to fill the like, what we think of as awkward silence as we're talking with ums and likes and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I get it. I actually always wanted to give a TED talk. And I volunteered with TEDx Rochester for a number of years, and I give all of those people so much credit, but I don't think I'm capable, because it's like memorization. And
do they ask you to memorize your speech?
There's like a formula to it.
Oh,
I was
wow.
never the coach. I was always the person that coordinated the event side of it.
Yeah.
But I loved to like hear the topic someone wanted to talk about, and they have you establish like a through line for the whole, you know, that topic kind of, it's like 10 to 15 minutes. And I can't memorize anything except, as a kid, I memorized the back of the Crest toothpaste tube.
Do you remember?
I do.
Well,
Crest has been shown to be an effective decay-preventive dentifrice that can be of significant value when used in a conscientiously applied program of oral hygiene and regular professional care. My mom told me to do that when I had trouble going to the bathroom.
That's probably the most unique thing that's ever happened on this podcast. That's awesome. That was awesome.
So.
I'm sorry. I'm not speechless very often. That's awesome that you had that memorized. You are awesome.
You know, okay. It's not on my LinkedIn, but, you know.
I think it should be. All right, I got to collect myself. I'm sorry. I need a deep breath. Okay. Where were we? Who are you again? I'm just kidding. Okay.
Now I forgot. Oh, but we were talking about public speaking.
Public speaking. The other thing, which is just obvious with almost anything in life, so I'm sorry to say something so obvious, but I, in my life, at least I've seen, is just reps. Just like, at this point in my life, if I'm getting up in front of a crowd, it's the 4,000th time I'm doing it. And whether I like it or not, that helps. Like, that just, it helps with the nerves.
Yeah.
It's I'm not getting nervous, and getting nervous is kind of the killer. You know?
Yep.
It stiffens you up. It's
especially like mannerisms. I remember in my public speaking classes in college, which is 25, I don't even want to think about how long ago, like different mannerisms that people would do. There was this one guy that would kind of waddle like penguin like back and forth, and you can't unsee it. And then that's all I can fixate on. And that's how I am today when I'm watching a speaker. Like, you're going to lose me if you have some sort of a behavior that I can't unsee.
Yeah, that makes sense. So do you speak all the time? I mean, do you
no, get to put I don't in, have anything like
you speak in front
exciting
of your,
to say, but
in front of your staff,
I can.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you ever make appearances in the classes at New York Kitchen and give a little spiel?
Yeah, sometimes they, especially with our junior chef program, where we have students who are middle school, high school, they have me come in and talk about my career path and, you know, my journey. And it's not all sunshine and roses. And I think that's a good thing, because it's something that they can actually relate to.
Yeah, it's great. So, I think it's great to show people that you have to, that a career isn't just like an upward trajectory with no,
right.
That everyone is going to experience hiccups. So let's get to that, actually.
Sure.
So you get out of college, like, what comes next?
I thought I was still going to work at an advertising agency, and I had to get my first job, and I applied. I think I was on, my resume was on like monster.com or whatever the website was at the time. And I got a cold call from, it was PayTech, but I had applied for I had applied for a job at PayTech, and the call was from Paychecks. And they kept being like, I'm so-and-so calling from, and I was like, who? Where? because I did not apply there, but I ended up doing that. I was like, well, what the hell? I don't have any other offers. So I interviewed and I ended up working in the handbooks department of paychecks for 2 years because you have to get your foot in the door somewhere.
Did you do, was that cold calling at all or like
no,
what?
No, no. We helped develop the employee handbooks for companies. So they would, a lot of times, you know, it was, there was like a template for what was legally okay. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of times clients would want to stray from that. And I mean, I have no legal background. So then you'd have to contact the people that know, you know, the experts in HR, law. And so, yeah, I did that for a couple of years just to get some like professional experience. Yeah.
You needed a resume. And honestly, around here, having paychecks on the resume is a good thing.
Oh, right? Yeah. People would see that and just, and I, it was kind of like, I love to, I'm a writer. So I thought handbooks, there's going to be writing. There was none of that. It was basically like a computer program, but I learned a lot. They had really strict rules there at the time. It's definitely lightened up 100%. Like you could only have one picture on your desk at that time. So I got a frame that had a bunch of different frames within it. Just to always pushing the limits, you know,
creative, you're being creative.
So
you did it for a couple of years and, and it, you're right. It's experience. You needed it for the resume, but it's not really what you're looking to do. So like what comes next after that then?
Then I worked in marketing for a senior living community for 9 years and I loved that.
Can I ask which one?
The Highlands at Pittsford.
Okay, great. Yeah. Loved that job.
Loved it. I met, I didn't grow up with, like being close with grandparents. So these residents were like that for me.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because even today, even though most of them have passed away, they move in their 80s and 90s. I see their adult children out and even through New York Kitchen. And it's just like, they're like, you remember me? And I'm like, I wish I could remember what I did 10 minutes ago, but I remember the people that I've met.
Yes. Yeah. I'm involved at St. Anne's and I love, I love elders. I think that they also tend to be, and this is really unfortunately why I'm involved at St. Anne's, they also tend to be like a forgotten segment of the population. There's just a million charities for children and diseases and animals, and there should be. They all need to have their charities. But like there's kind of elders just kind of get like, they get put away once they get too old and then they're forgotten.
Like they're good.
And hopefully their family will come visit them. And it's so sad. And they have such great stories.
The stories,
they're so
next
good.
Level. And even if it's a little strain from the truth, I'm here for it.
That's okay.
Some of my favorite like career memories are there. And like, I don't think I could work with children or anything related to animals. I remember interviewing for a job at Lollipop Farm and was so excited about it. And then they tour you around. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to have no friends if I work here because I'm going to be pushing animals that are up for adoption on everyone. Yeah. So,
and you're going to end up with seven.
Yeah.
Yourself.
I'm going to be a hoarder. Yeah, so, so it was definitely a good place for me. And I was there for 9 years.
That's a long stretch. Yeah. So what finally, after 9 years, you're really getting settled in there. I mean, what makes you make the decision to move on from that? Because at that point, you're probably looking going, I could probably just do this forever.
Right. I had no room to grow. My boss at the time there was clearly going to be there for a number of years until retirement. So decided to mix it up. And I was volunteering at the time for a nonprofit, the Women's Foundation of Genesee Valley. And so an opportunity presented itself. I'm very vocal about the importance of volunteering, not just to benefit nonprofits, but you never know what opportunities are there for you career-wise.
Yeah, of course.
So I worked there for a few years and then decided to start freelancing from a marketing, communications, and nonprofit fundraising standpoint. And I did that for a couple of years and then the pandemic happened and my services were the first to get cut.
Yeah, that sucks.
So,
can we go back to something you just said, though? What you just said is some really good insight into like what, when you're volunteering, there's what is in it for you. First of all, let's not be completely embarrassed to say that there can be something in it for you to volunteer. You're volunteering for that cause, and that's great. But what are you gaining? You are gaining something. And what you just said made me think about something I don't think we've ever talked about on this podcast, which is I volunteer on, I'm on four local not-for-profit boards. And I love the work.
Yeah.
But also, I'm sitting in board meetings hearing how other CEOs, managers, CFOs, senior level people, how they think and how they read their profit and loss report and how they get through hard times and how they, so I'm in a board meeting serving a not-for-profit, but also watching other senior executives processes and taking that and then making it part of my world here in my business. And it's there. So there is, and I don't think it's a terrible thing to say that there is something in it for me, but there is.
Yeah.
You know, I can't, we had a, like a 3 hour long joint board meeting. It's a once a year thing at St. Anne's. And my wife, after 3 hours, I came home and my wife is like, 3 hours. Like, and I said, no, it's really interesting.
I would kill for 3 hours of board time, which sounds ridiculous.
Well, listen, there's a lot of confidential stuff, so I can't. There's a lot that I can't say here as far as what I'm talking about. But you're talking about notable CFOs and CEOs from around Rochester talking about how they handle business. You can't get better than that. That's college, man. Sorry, and I just wanted to point that out. I'm glad you said that because that's never come up before, and I love talking about that.
Yeah.
But we caught to the pandemic.
Yeah.
Pandemic, if I could just now talk a little New York Kitchen. I was an instructor at New York Kitchen from 2014 to about 2023. Was it? Last year was my first full year of not doing it.
Yeah.
So I think it was like the end of 2023. Yep. So almost 10 years. And the pandemic was one of the saddest times because that place right before the pandemic was vibrant, noisy, just life. There was so much life there. And then the pandemic happened and like the rest of the world, it shut down. Then we came back in like the fall and it was a shell of itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was like I would go in to do class. People were wearing face masks and it was one person to a station.
Yeah, it was half capacity.
Half the building was dark. The lights were off and it was just... It was so disheartening. And then when you came in, life started coming back.
Oh.
A lot of that is attributable to you. Some of it's just the world came back.
Right.
But a ton of it's attributable to you. And so kudos to you for that because
Thank
I was
you.
At least there to see you like breathe life back into that place.
Thank you.
But I'm really curious to hear how it all came to be. So who calls who? How does this happen?
So I had started to think I got to figure out what's next. This is like March when things are shut, when things shut down. And I'm a big believer in you want people to be talking about you in rooms that you're not present in. And that's kind of what happened. The board was looking at restructuring things and they were looking for an executive director versus previously it had been a general manager. They had someone on loan from Constellation Brands that was supposed to be 6 months and she was there 2.5 years.
Right.
And so this was a time for them to rethink some things. And they were the like criteria was we need someone who's a foodie, who loves wine and craft beverage and understands how to operate a nonprofit. And my name came up a couple of times, which I'm really grateful for. And so the opportunity came to me. I interviewed. I actually had... not that people can see, but I have grown my gray out. But at the time, I started doing that in February. Just I happened to decide it, and then the world shut down, and I was like, great opportunity. I had dyed my, I tried to cover some of the gray a little bit with a temporary thing, and it turned purple. and so I interviewed with like purple streaks in my hair, which
That's
was
awesome.
Not ideal. But yeah, so that was June, and then I started July 2020, and it took me, you know, a handful of months. So what you're talking about, like fall, that's when I really got into the swing of things. But it still was half capacity, nothing really happening indoors, except we kind of were in this loophole of education. So I got to kind of slowly ease into learning how to operate the organization. A lot of people don't even know that we're a nonprofit. So,
but don't you have a kind of, and maybe this has changed, but don't you have a weird setup in that isn't upstairs is for profit and downstairs is not for profit. And that is like, not, that's strange.
That's strange.
It's weird. Yeah.
So part of the restructuring during COVID was to outsource the restaurant and private event operations. So like if you want to have a wedding and stuff there, we had a partner to do that. So that still exists, like that model today. I would not have accepted the job if I had to run a restaurant.
Right.
I would be divorced.
Did previous,
it's not a good idea.
They were running the restaurant previously?
Yeah, they did all of
That's
it.
That's incredible,
and
yeah.
And so when you do that, you know, a restaurant, it's like a fire, like constantly putting out fires. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of the resources went towards operating a restaurant and event venue versus the education and the like classes and experiences that we provide today, which, I mean, the biggest thing, I was so familiar with New York Kitchen and the Wine and Culinary Center when it was when they went by that, because it was like the ultimate date night. Like my husband and I would buy classes for each other as gifts because we didn't need any more shit around the house. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to one of your classes. It wasn't a hands-on class. It was in the theater. It was like a demonstration type
class.
Used to
do 2 a month. That's right.
Yeah. So I was very familiar. It's always like a blast when I see memories on Facebook that it's like 12 years ago and it's me in a class with an apron and a name tag.
Yeah. My wife and I's third date was at the New York Wine and Culinary Center.
Do you remember what class?
Yes, I do, and I still remember the dish we made. It was Chef. He is Chef Tom, I believe. Now he's the guy from Palmer's.
Yeah.
The chef from Palmer's.
Tom Schimmel.
Tom. Does he still do any classes or no?
No, he took a step back.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was Chef Tom, who's at Palmer's. So I still see him once in a while. And the dish that we made was a pork tenderloin dish. It was apples, bacon, and onions. So you fried the bacon, essentially. You know, this was all in like one skillet, really. You fried the bacon, took the bacon out, used that grease then to caramelize the onions, and then took that out and then used that to... Then you did the apples kind of in that... goop.
Yeah.
And then that all became one thing. And then the pork tenderloin got marinated in like mustard. I remember that was a really kind of like a unique thing I had never thought of. But it had like a spice blend, but then mustard. And then sear that and then it did go into the oven. But I still will make that probably once or twice a year.
Wow.
From our third date, I still make that dish.
I love that.
Yeah. I remember sitting in that chair. I remember it like, and I loved that place. I thought it was awesome. I remember where I was when Sheffrey, who at the time was running the classes, I remember where I was when him and Jordan Ettinger, does that ring a bell to you?
Yep.
Called me to see if I'd be interested in doing a class. I was so thrilled to do a class there that I remember exactly where I was when they called me.
I can't wait for Jordan to listen to this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She was, and then she was like in one of my first classes. And then Jordan actually, and this, I hope she doesn't mind me saying this, but Jordan came to a class and brought her father. Mm-hmm. And they had a great time. And then her father passed sort of suddenly, like way before his time. And if I remember correctly, it was there was no warning signs. It was out of nowhere. And it was like 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
And she wrote me this email just to say, like, I want you to know one of my last... I'm going to cry even talking about it. She wrote me an email just to say, like, I want you to know one of my last times with my dad, like a really fun night out, was that cooking class. I know.
Well, that makes sense then, because when you came back, I think you came back like reunion tour, Polly's class. Mm-hmm. She was adamant she had to be there with her family, and that makes complete sense why.
Yeah, I remember that class too, and I looked at that as an actual like tear.
Oh.
That was so meaningful to me. Like that was so sweet, and I couldn't believe I had an impact on somebody in that way.
Why I love what we do, because we provide experiences. You never know what kind of shit people are going through, mm-hmm. but if we can provide some sort of entertainment, education, whatever it is, where you're kind of disconnecting from whatever is going on outside mm-hmm. and having this like memorable experience.
Yes. And by the way, like third date, I can't recommend this enough for one of those early dates where it's still just a little bit, I don't know if awkward is the right word, but like, you know, you're not 100% familiar with each other yet. You know, sitting across from each other at dinner, maybe you're not an amazing conversationalist.
Yep.
Movies aren't great because they don't allow any room for conversation. Like a cooking class is such a perfect idea for like a second, third kind of date type deal.
You learn a lot about someone when you're cooking with them.
Oh yeah.
It's so awesome to watch. Like we get a lot of groups that do team building, and I'm mm-hmm. like, you're going to learn a lot about your coworkers through this. And even now, like Bill and I, my husband, we do them once in a while, but I disappear into the tasting room and he's like, what the fuck? Like, I'm not here to cook the whole thing by myself. We were supposed to do this together, but I'm easily distracted. Yeah. But we still have a really good time.
Yeah.
Hello, hello, folks. My name is Magnus. I am host of The Mind of Magnus. It's a podcast where I focus on expanding my brain and bringing some awesome people along the way to help expand your brain. So I have some new seasons and some awesome new guests coming up this year. So join me. Send me some factoids if you have your own. I even have a call-in line. So check it out. Find me at mindofmagnus.com, wherever you get your Lunch Door podcast network, which is everywhere.
I'm Chris Lindstrom, the host of the Food About Town podcast. If you want to learn more about the Rochester food and drink scene and beyond, with a good dose of nerdery and personal stories on top, then Food About Town is for you. I've been writing and podcasting for over 10 years, and I'm so thankful for all the support from the community. Subscribe to the Food About Town podcast today and hear from the people that make and love the food and beverages you can't stop enjoying.
So what did you do then, you know, in those next couple of years? We talked about coming out of COVID, but like between 2021 and now, like what do you really feel like that journey's been like? And then kind of a part two to that question is you mentioned how to run a nonprofit. I am willing to be told if I'm wrong. Don't be afraid to tell me if I'm wrong. But I've always felt like you have to run a nonprofit, maybe not exactly the way you would run a business, but similar. Because if you aim to not make a profit, you'll probably do a good job of that.
Right. Yeah.
So you need to try for profit.
Yeah. And that is, I mean, we provide an experience and a service. So I think what we did to kind of pivot, I hate using that word, but... was really just focusing more on the mission, which is celebrating what's coming out of New York State, the agriculture, you know, the food products, the craft beverage, and really doing that through these experiences that we offer. And there was, because it's food, I mean, you I'm sure you know, you get invited to do all of these like guest chef stuff outside of, you know, the property. And really what we needed to do, and we still do some of like a little bit, but really we need to bring people to New York Kitchen. Yeah. So that was really the main focus. I've got an incredible team, and it takes, I mean, I'm going to be going on 5 years there. It takes time to build that, but that's a huge part of it. And then having the talent, like the instructors that do, you know, I can cook, but my nieces, they're 9, or actually they just turned 10. They would tell their friends like, yes, he's a chef. And I'm like, oh, no. But they saw a kitchen and that's what they associated it with. Mm-hmm. But no, I give so much credit to the people that do the thing. Mm-hmm. So I think it was really just like focusing on the mission and doing what we do and doing it well.
Yeah.
And then
core competency, yeah, we call it. Yeah. Yep. Stay in your core competency. Yep.
And then operating like a business, but you also have, you know, to fundraise or to make ends meet. So what does that look like? And partnering with the right companies that have the means to give, mm-hmm. Like food businesses, foundations that have grants available. We were fortunate to get some tourism return to work grants. So we were creating new jobs, but all related to tourism. So there was definitely some benefits from a grant standpoint. And then New York State, Empire State Development has their Market New York program. And it's something that everybody applies for, or not everyone, because we're going to apply again this year. But there's funding for tourism and supporting New York State products, and that's our mission. So
something like I would like to put out there as well, and I don't want to put you in an awkward spot, but I'm kind of defending something that once in a while I have heard, is that you have the Constellation Brands machine behind you. And I think that in a way that's true. I know that's the history.
Yep.
And I'm sure there's Constellation presence on your board. I don't know, but I'm assuming. But also they're not just, and again, tell me if I'm wrong, they're not just going to cut you checks anytime you need money.
Yep.
They want to see you operating. Like, you need to answer right to that board. And so I would once in a while hear like, don't worry about them, they got Constellation behind them. I'm like, no, like they got
that's a myth that we're still trying to get, you know, trying to communicate. So next year is actually our 20-year anniversary, which awesome. Is wild. Yeah. But We were started, there was an organization or a place in Napa, California called Copia, and started by Robert Mondavi, and blanking on who the other, well, anyways, it was championed by Robert Mondavi, and Marvin Sands wanted, like, this was kind of a vision to have something like this in the Finger Lakes. And so Rob Sands, Constellation Brands, brought that to the table, and it was a collaboration of Constellation, Wegmans, RIT, and the New York Wine and Grape Foundation. That was how we were founded. People to this day still say Constellation owns us, or the Sands family owns us. We're so grateful for their leadership and, you know, funds, you know, the giving that they have done and continue to do. But we recognize that we can't have the same funders forever. And so we, you know, obviously funding changes. And so we had to diversify our funding. Mm-hmm. And that's what I continue to work towards. So we do still get support from Constellation. It's definitely not what it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, but mm-hmm. so grateful for it. It's very strategic of what, you know, what they're helping us with. They're sponsoring this year's garden party. They're actually our lead sponsor.
Awesome.
The garden party is our biggest fundraiser, August 12th, shameless plug.
Great event. I've been a couple of times.
Great event. So we're really grateful for their support, and the same thing with the Sands Family Foundation.
Yeah, that's great. You did a really great job of explaining that. You know, it's just the they're not just, you guys can't just sit back and kick your feet up and go, oh, Daddy Constellation will take care of
us. It's not like fair to them either.
Right. You guys have to work your asses off. And I just want to make sure people know that, because I've seen
you do it.
I've seen the staff do it. I've seen it happen with you there. I've seen it happen before you were there. Like, you guys are working your asses off, and you deserve for people to know that.
Thank you. Right?
Okay. So you gave a little history, and I did want to hear the history, but there was kind of like this storyline of New York Wine and Culinary Center. One day they decided to rebrand. I fully understand at that point you weren't there.
No.
But what do you know about that decision? Do you know any of the insight of that? Not really.
I don't. I will say that as we're approaching 20 years, I've mentioned to the team and board the idea of not another name change completely, but something that really shares more of what we do. People hear New York Kitchen and they're always like restaurant. Mm-hmm. People think I run a restaurant, and I have to be like, nope, I would not work there if I ran a restaurant. I did that in college, or actually I grew up in the restaurant industry. We didn't celebrate holidays. We worked them even at probably an illegal age.
Your parents owned restaurants?
My stepdad did.
Oh, what restaurant?
He owned, it's no longer, it was called Hawthorne's. It was on East Avenue. It was after it eventually turned into the Back Nine. They demolished it, right, and now it's something else.
So it was in Rochester, not Hilton.
No, not Rochester. Hilton. And did actually, he operated the restaurant inside of the Memorial Art Gallery. So where I worked a lot of the times in college, like hungover on a Sunday, waiting tables inside of the Memorial Art Gallery.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that, you know, people hear New York Kitchen and they think restaurant, because I was around at the time of the name change, and I was like privy and under, you know, not, it's never really behind the scenes, but I was always friends with whoever the general manager was at the time. And it was the exact opposite problem. People would see Culinary Center and think they couldn't just walk in.
My understanding is they tried to make it seem more approachable, and mm-hmm. I think they accomplished that for sure.
Yeah.
But I think it kind of took away from the classes. So went away from Culinary Center to be less like pretentious and more approachable. And then you kind of lost it a little bit with the New York Kitchen. So
I
am no graphic designer, but like sometimes I add a little tagline under it to kind of just like, here's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So
I remember the talk of the Culinary Center, that maybe somebody who didn't know and was just in town on vacation, because in the summer it is touristy, right? Mm-hmm. Would drive by and think that's a school. I can't just walk in there because that's a school.
Right.
I remember that being the exact argument. And so it's interesting to me now that you feel like you're on the complete opposite end of that almost.
Right.
But it is a predicament. And so that's interesting to hear that you kind of,
I've added like the big sign. There's a couple of signs outside that just say New York Kitchen. And we got like vinyl words, so it says like classes, tasting room, and
oh, that's great.
Yeah,
that's really
just
smart.
So people, you know, really put it in your face. Mm-hmm. And people, even locals, still are like, what happens in there? It's like, just walk in.
Yeah Well, the other brilliant thing you guys did, and it granted it's a seasonal town, but that front patio. Mm-hmm. Right, like in the summer. Yep. It's clear that
was
a party
the big
going on.
Thing we needed to see activity. Mm-hmm. And then also with COVID, we were like, we don't know where this is going to go. We need to have outdoor space, and the gardens are gorgeous, but we wanted to have more of that. So if we had to have, you know, a barbecue class outside or a wine tasting class outside, we had the capability to do that.
One of the other things I think that what I just always thought was so cool about that place was the seasonality of Canandaigua. And how in January, the class would be full of Rochesterians.
Yep.
But in July, there would be people from all over the world in those classes.
Yep.
And it was tough for me because I had some recognizance in Rochester. But in July, I'd walk in, you know, and they'd be like, now, who are you?
Yeah. So. I've still been trying to communicate this to people because people are like, oh, it's the slow season. And I'm like, our busy time is January, February, March.
Yeah,
because
Christmas
people
presents.
Christmas presents. Yeah. Exactly. Actually, there was one year that my husband and I got the same class for each other.
That's awesome.
It was like Pass the Pesto or something. But so, yeah, you're right. And then once peak season in Canandaigua comes, you get a lot of people that are season, you know, they have a place on the lake or they're visiting for a week. They've got an Airbnb. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy. We get a lot of people now from Buffalo, which I love.
Cool.
Like, they're not afraid of driving an hour and a half for a cool experience. So that's been a lot of fun because I am that person. I will drive an hour and a half for food.
Yeah.
And wine.
I would too.
Right?
I get. Oh, yeah. So I was at the press conference where they announced the name change to New York Kitchen. First of all, one story I've never told. The story that I've never told, but anyone who was there that day could have seen it, was it was a windy day. And they had put in the new sign, but they had a like tarp over it. And as you were walking into the building, the tarp was just blowing all over the place. And it was just right there.
So there's like, there's no mystery
there's
here.
No mystery.
Yeah.
No, there's no mystery.
Vanna's not going to do a great. Oh, man.
The second thing, and this, I want to be so like careful about this because this was the thrill of a lifetime. But I got to interview Rob Sands that day. And it's rare. That's rare, right? That Rob Sands is going to sit down and do an interview. But he was all in on like, what do you need from me PR wise to like announce this change? And he knows, if he's going to do the talking, it's going to get media coverage, right? So I had organized that I was going to do a podcast. This exact recorder, this exact one right here, got Rob Sands. It was really cool. I had organized that I was going to get 30 minutes with him. That's insane. That's Rob Sands. He's not doing 30 minutes, right? So I am freaking thrilled. Well, it's a little better than, you know, it was a little like too good to be true. Because after the press conference, I'm set up in the back and the publicist gets Rob and basically tells him, like, you got this guy's podcast now. And you can, and she says something to him and he says something back and you can tell it's not great what he's said back, right? So they start walking towards me and she hurries up to walk a little ahead of him so she can get like 5 seconds with me before he's, so she gets up to me and what does she say? She goes, you've got 5 minutes. So I, for weeks, have been planning out this interview in my head of this like 30-minute interview. And now, all of a sudden, with about 5 seconds notice, I realize I've got 5 minutes. Now, 5 minutes with Rob Sands is still a really big deal.
Yep.
I mean, that's a thrill still. But I sit across from him and like, I have this whole like, you know, I want to do this real interview. And I basically,
you're like, which couple of questions?
Oh, yeah. So I essentially panicked. I asked him about his father, which, to tell you the truth, went well.
Right.
Like, he talked about his dad for a minute or two. Then I asked him about buying Corona. I was like, how do you, like, just buy Corona? I go, who calls who? Like, what happens? How does a deal like that come? And this is going to be visual, but he does this. I ask him that. I finish the question. I stumble through the question. I, you know, I like, it's embarrassing. And then he just... keeps my gaze for an extra 2 or 3 seconds, doesn't say a word, holds his wrist up to his, looks at his watch, looks back at me, and goes, yeah, okay, sure. You want to know how we bought Corona? And then he like gives a 30-second answer, right? Which was still, but like.
I'm just cracking up because they've just unveiled a new brand as New York Kitchen, and you're like, let's talk about this imported beer.
He's like, what the fuck? He's, and like everything, and I'm in front of a billionaire. I'm in front of one of the most successful businessmen in the planet, and in Rochester, you know, it's him and Tom Collison. Like, that's it. And I'm blowing it. I am just blowing it. Like, you know, he is just like, he is, get me out of here. And so he answers the Corona question. The publicist sees this whole thing. This is clear. This is as loud a body language as there can be. And he gives an acceptable answer to the Corona question. Like, he answers the question. But she gets behind him so I can see her, but he can't. And she just gives me the look. She goes, one more. One more. Then one more. She's saying one more. She's holding up a one. And she says, one more. One more. And then she points at the sign for New York Kitchen. She goes, New York Kitchen. One more.
I love it.
I asked.
You were
her,
like,
so,
well, had we gone through my full.
We were going to get there.
Yeah, we were going to get there.
That was the whole last 10 minutes, but okay. So then I ask him, and of course he gives us his talking points, and we're all good.
Yeah.
I still thrilled that even happened. Like, I got to sit across from Rob Sands. That is so freaking cool.
Yeah.
But it was.
One of my first interviews was with him. Or no, it was probably one of the last interviews. They, like, as I was vetted through the process.
That must have been
intimidating. And it was through Zoom. Yeah.
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 It was. I mean, that's tough. That's, you know,
I don't remember. I mean, it clearly went well, but yeah.
You nailed it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, what else? What's the future? Give me some future stuff about New York Kitchen. What's going on?
There's some exciting stuff in the works
not ready
that
to be
I can't
announced
announce okay. for a couple of weeks.
Along the lines of types of classes, celebrities coming in, events, additions, subtractions.
It's
nothing.
I can't say, but it's partnership.
Oh,
and,
wonderful. Big news?
Yeah, big news, big opportunity that is just lets us further kind of hone in on our mission. So awesome. I'm really excited about that.
How long have you been working on that?
It's really been like 6 months.
Oh, okay.
It's been like something that's been talked about, but to see it come together. So for the people listening, like, stay tuned on our social media. We'll for sure be sharing things, but it's exciting. We've been doing a lot with local farmers. We created, it's an event called Meet Your Local Farmer, but the abbreviation is MILF with a Y, obviously.
Oh, I love it.
So that has nothing to do with the actual event, but that's what we call it internally, the MILF.
Okay, okay.
So it was just earlier this month, the Meet Your Local Farmer Fair, where we had like 30 vendors, and it's farms, it's craft beverage, it's all kinds of things. And people show up like early, like we're giving a grand prize $1 million away, but I love that. Like, and last year I felt bad because last year was really the first year we did it. And it was like a big undertaking, and I was out of town. I went to California to see my family, and I was like, so like to be like, all right, see you guys, you got this. So to be able to do it this in person, to be there in person this year was awesome.
That's great.
And then earlier this year, we kind of got this event thrown our way in January, which wasn't ideal timing given we're busy, but we created this sip and taste market. And again, people came out in droves. Vendors ran out of product. Like, they were sampling stuff, but they were selling stuff too. They ran out of product to sell.
Awesome.
Like, it was so successful that what I love is when these businesses are saying, when can we do this again? And it's like, well, we don't want to overdo it and then it loses its luster, but I'm really excited to keep that stuff going. And these partnerships with farms, whether they're like 10 miles up the road or, you know, an hour away. Like, I'm a vegetarian, which I don't really say, and now I'm saying it on a podcast, but I try to not tell people that because I'm still fascinated with like the farm to table aspect. And so there's this farm, Tamberlane, is beef and pork. And we just love working with them. It's like third generation family. And like, I talk about that and people are like, you eat steak? And I'm like, no, I just really just love the story.
How long
have
you been
a
vegetarian?
Concept. Probably 20 years.
Oh, a long time.
Well, there was a slip up in the middle there with some real quality bacon, but... which it's a slippery
was
slope.
That a one
then there
night
were
thing,
then there or... were chicken wings.
Oh.
It's like
oh my
it's
goodness.
The gateway meat.
Oh yeah.
So
what made you eat that first piece of bacon after years of vegetarianism?
I was hungover in New York City in my aunt's apartment and all she had was bacon and it was like farm fresh. I mean it's New York City, so it was not from too far away, probably yeah. like upstate. And it was so good.
It was just like glorious.
And then it was like, okay, chicken wings, fried chicken sandwiches.
How did your stomach deal with that?
Hot
after?
Dogs, love Zweigels, you know? Oh, yeah. So it's actually, it was not as bad as I thought.
You went on a bender.
Yeah, I went on a bender. I was also single at the time. So I was trying to like fit in with Gen Pop, kind of, you know, not be the weird vegetarian girl. And then I realized that the only meats I was eating were just, not the healthiest. Yeah. I don't like fish. I've tried so hard. It's like there's gagging involved. It's not pretty. Mm. So, I just went back to it. But yeah, there was that slip up for about 6 months.
Oh man, that's a long run there.
Yeah,
man. That's, you know what? It's okay. You came
and,
back.
And I am not vegan. I love cheese. Whenever someone, I say vegetarian, like if I'm at a restaurant and they'll say, oh, do you eat cheese? Do you eat dairy? And I'm like, I love cheese. That's what, do you eat dairy? I love cheese is always the response because I don't want them to leave that out of my meal.
Give me the cheese, cheese.
Yeah.
Oh, Alyssa, I think we did it. Can I pitch you real quick?
Give it to me.
Can I pitch? There was an idea I always wanted to do as a class. And if you were to green light this, I would come back and I would do this class. And I promote the hell out of it.
I can't wait.
Do you already know it or no?
No.
It wasn't like living on in lore because there was like a little bit of a tiff over this.
Oh, boy.
Did you hear it or no? You don't know what I'm about to say?
I think I might.
What? You tell me.
The Feast of the Seven Fishes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Feast of the Seven Fishes. But let's talk a little bit in the future real quick. Can we talk? I don't remember exactly when this was. Bunch of years ago, I want to do Feast of the Seven Fishes, and somebody kind of comes to me. This is before your time, so it would have been, I think, even pre-COVID. Honestly, I think this was that far back. Somebody comes to me and they go, "We can't do this for $60 or whatever the class was at the time." And I was like, "I don't expect you to charge $100, charge $120, but whatever you got to charge." And they're like, "We'll never sell it." I'm like, "I'm going." Bullshit, you will.
I think it would sell.
A one night only, even, and I would imagine in 2025, you probably got to go well over $100. But but still, I'm telling you, one night only, Feast of the Seven Fishes class will sell. And you know, there was a person there who was
sell.
Like,
yep.
No,
yep.
We will not do it.
I think it's doable. It just has to be priced accordingly and like figuring out, you know, do certain stations do certain, parts of it because it is that would be a lot to cook but have you seen the bear?
Yeah.
So there's an episode where Jamie Lee Curtis, it's one of my favorite ones. It's the best one.
Yeah.
And I feel like that kind of brought it back and like it's going to be chaos in the kitchen just like that episode.
I know how to cheat. Like the way to get the seven fishes in with only four stations is one of them Zuppa di Pesce, because then you can get a bunch of fish into one dish.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
Which is nice. Which is easy.
Okay.
So we could talk if you're actually.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but you know, if you want to.
I mean, I love this. Yeah. Like Pauly returns.
One night only.
One night only.
Yeah.
Let's sell it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know what? How about this? We just said it. Let's say there's 24 spots, right?
Yeah.
Let's say if 12 spots get sold just based on this right now, then I'll send you that and I'll say, hey, 12 people reached out to me and said they would sign up for this class. So if you're hearing this, please reach out.
Yep.
Let's just say my cell phone, 585-350-5788. Why are you making that face? My cell phone's on every jar of sauce.
I know this because my next door neighbors, they're the Polka twins. Well, my former next door neighbors, I gave them a jar of your sauce and they loved it. And then I remember them saying, we called his number and left him a voicemail. And
I probably called him back
and
or at least
I'm
texted
like,
them back.
Oh, poor thing.
No, I love it.
Okay.
And those are my favorite things.
They're Polish twins, triplets actually. But
so if we aim for like fall, like mid to late fall, right? November-ish maybe seems right. I don't know. That's your decision. But
okay.
If I can get at least half the room full just based on this plug right now, I feel like that's a good enough start to say.
I think so.
And I know we can't pick a price right now, but if you're going to say yes, just understand you're probably going to pay well over $100.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, and Alyssa, don't believe me, this is probably saying, I'm guessing we're in the 120 to 140 range. That's a guess. That's a guess. I don't know. That's your decision. It might even be higher than that, but I don't know. But anyway.
But if we could partner with some local distributors
there's some cheap fish too. Like, like not all the fish has to be. Like we don't need to do crab and lobster. There's some fish is cheap.
Okay.
We'll figure it out.
Maybe I will try something given that I don't like fish. I'll give it a go. I did have an anchovy recently. So I dabbled. I dipped my toe.
Well, actually, so like an anchovy, like clam pasta is actually a relatively cheap dish, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, in comparatively, I understand. Yeah. Well, we could talk.
Okay.
Anyway, so 585-350-5788. If I get 12 tickets sold, Alyssa says we're talking.
It's on. We're talking.
Okay.
We're talking. Game on, sort of.
Okay. Anything else?
What my
else
team's going to, this is where I lose them.
Oh, they're going to get mad. I'm sorry. You could say no. Do you want to say no?
No. I'm here for it. I love this. I love it.
All right.
Cool.
I won't, and by the way, also like no fee, like for me, like I'm not.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, just that, eat that. Well, that's, you know.
Yeah.
Did you just hear that?
Yeah.
Something just fell. Okay. I think that's our cue to go. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
New York Kitchen's the best.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch Hour Podcast Network.